episode of Dinosaur United. I'm Andre Carlisle here with Courtney Stiff. Courtney, how are you?
Tired. I just worked for like almost a month straight.
Yeah.
I just need a moment. I need several moments, actually.
Several moments. All right. Well, we'll see if we get this. I'm going to say this off top as manifesting. We're going to see if we can make it so. We're going to try and do a shorter episode. Every time we say that, we talk for about an hour and a half. So we're going to
have a short episode. And one time we talked literally for 2 hours.
We sure
straight.
Did. Yes, we absolutely did that. Yes, I remember. I was like, wow, it is. I'm looking at the counter and it was like 1:40, like an hour and 40 something. And I was like, yeah, we are not even close to being done with our agenda.
Anytime we're like, we're going to have a short episode. But then it happens to be like we haven't talked on the pod for like 2.5 weeks, and it's like 2.5 hours, and it's like, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm saying it off top. We're going to try, and basically, if you're listening to this, you already know whether we succeeded or not. So, you know, shout out to you. Living
Sometimes
in the future.
You have feelings. This Sometimes you have fun. Feelings we have to get out.
Right. So, okay, let's get to the review, because that's what we do. We love to read reviews at the top of the podcast because we appreciate it and love and need y'all to rate and review the podcast. It is important for all the reasons that everybody who does a podcast tells you, obviously. 5 stars, please. Leave a review, please, if you can. Dad joke, and I might as well just give in and say it now, right?
Leave Andre a middle name.
Yeah, whatever. Or
I see them flowing in, and each one of them cracks me up, and we will read them on the pod. One of them recently was like literally so funny that we're reading it next week.
Those of you who do not leave a middle name, you are my favorites. Thank you so much.
And for those of you who do, you are mine.
So we have a review from Courtney. Not that one. Are you sure?
That was immediately funny when I read that.
Are we doing
parentheses, not that one? I was like, oh, this is hilarious.
Are we inflating the reviews of our own podcast? Is that where we're at now?
No, because that one literally made me cackle. When I saw Courtney in parentheses, not that one. And I was like, oh, fantastic.
This review says, hi from Canada. Shout out. Shout out to you from Canada. We have a reviewer. She's from Canada. You may not know her. Here's the review. Love, love, love listening to this pod on my long runs. Andre and Courtney keep me entertained and thinking critically. I love their coverage of the U.S. Women's National Team and Canada X National Team in particular. Thank you, Courtney. So be like Courtney. Not that one. This one.
I just knew it was going to be funny off the top. Thank you, Courtney. Fun fact, I'm used to calling people named Courtney, because I work with another Courtney S, which just makes my life really, really fun, which means I've just started ignoring people when they're like Courtney. And I've just like, if I know the other Courtney is there, like in the room with us, and I just like literally default that it's not me till someone yells at me like, hello. And I'm like, oh, sorry. But yeah, thank you, Courtney. That Courtney.
I love that you go the opposite direction of people with your name. Like normally if you call like somebody's name, like you'll get everybody name that name, turn around and be like, yes, correct. Were you talking to me? And you're obviously like, nah, that ain't me.
Yeah, I've experienced a full life of being called names that sometimes are my name, but also sometimes aren't my name when people are trying to get my attention. So I've just discovered I just like for the most part ignore people and assume they're not talking to me until someone comes over and it's like hello, and I'm like hello. So it's just a learned trait at this point.
All good. Luckily I don't have that problem. There aren't too many people named Andre, and I thank my mom for that. All right, on this episode we are going to talk all about the W Gold Cup. We're going to talk about the final first, and then we're going to kind of talk about the tournament overall, but I've got a lot to say about the final, so there will probably be a lot about the final.
Get us started. Let's go.
Let's do it. Okay, the final happened, the W Gold Cup final. I was very excited about this final. We thought we might get a bit of a chaos game. I was like, there ain't no way we're going to run out the exact same 11 because it's been 2 straight games in 3 days. It would be 3 games in a week. And Two of those games were as ultra chaotic and physical, and then guess what happened?
Technically, there were two changes.
Technically, there were.
The nine out of the same 11 were run out.
I'll tell you that. Washington Spirit fans aren't too happy that we just, they seem relentless in making sure that Trinity Rodman plays as much as possible. And I'm like, please stop this. Please.
I'm curious how the PSG girls that were cheering Corbin along will feel when she comes back being like, I've played nearly every minute of this tournament.
Yeah, that was actually hilarious seeing those. I didn't necessarily anticipate that happening, but they were bouncing and having a good time. I was like, okay.
Corbin! I was crying when I saw Sandra and I were laughing about it for like 25 minutes after the game. I was like, oh, this is the greatest. I was like, this is so like wholesome and pure, but also like the last thing I ever expected.
All right, let me just set up the game, right? It was Brazil, who has honestly been the most, I would say, entertaining and probably the best performing team of the entire W Gold Cup. So we were really going into this match. I thought, and I wrote, that the U.S. were underdogs in this one. The game versus Mexico, obviously, they lost the game, whereas Brazil did not. And Brazil, once their first game against Puerto Rico, they only won 1-0, and it seemed like they were really struggling to combine. That was the only game that they didn't have a back three. They were in a 4-2-3-1. And then they went back three and had just been scoring goals and doing typical Brazil things and looking excellent. And so that was exciting. And we just thought, given the tiredness of the U.S. team and the last time we saw perhaps the attempt to tweak a system and tweak a lineup, Twyla didn't quite get it right. It was the Mexico game. And finally settled on something that did at least work versus versus Colombia, apologies. And then it worked, you know, given that waterlogged game against Canada. Who knows if it worked or not, but they got through that game.
Wait, do you want to quickly hear my fan theory about the waterlogged game?
Yes.
The reason why I think no one got hurt, genuinely, is because of the waterlogged. Because we know that Snapdragon can be so patchy that the water filled up the patchiness. So people weren't able to like get caught in the field. Like their cleats and spikes and stuff weren't able to get caught in the field, which is why everyone, at least that we know, came off unscathed. That's my new theory. Because I saw the field from high up, even on the day where it's supposed to have 3 days, an extra 3 days of grass growing. Still real patchy spots. Like you get up in like the boxes in the broadcast booth. You go take a nice look down, and you're like, oh, she's still a little patchy. Need some growth in them patches.
I will say I think it's high time for us to have a conversation or ban Snapdragon from tournaments and major championships until we can figure out what's going on. Something's up with that.
I was like, or it's got to be like April before, like long after football season's over. Before the NWSL like really starts and getting gritty, because from high up it still was not great.
Yeah. So here are the lineups. That was kind of the setup to the game. It looked like it was going to be a very fun encounter, a very different test for the U.S. Brazil were in their back three. Luciana was in goal, which just one of the most entertaining goalkeepers.
She's Tice my new fave.
The back three, Tice, Tarcian, and Antonia. And then you had Yasmin and Duda Sampaio, Santos, Adriana, Beatriz, Gabi Nunez, and Portillo, which that was an interesting one. I didn't exactly expect that change, but hey, that was fun. And then the U.S. stuck with Alyssa Nair and goal. Back four, we did get a change. No Jenna Neiswanger. It was Emily Fox on the right, Naomi Girma, Tierna Davidson, and then Crystal Dunn. Was in for Neiswanger. You had the double pivot. Sam Coffey, Corbin Albert played every single game of the knockout rounds. You had Trinity Rodman on the right of the 4-2-3-1. Lindsay Horan, central, and Roosevelt, left wing, tucking in a little bit. But again, a Garrett Taylor copy-paste. Never
War go flashbacks! Taylor.
Never go full Garrett Taylor. Come on, Twyla. And Alex Morgan up top. So, Courtney, thoughts on lineups, your kind of thoughts on what the match was going to be.
Yeah, Well, I was surprised about a few things. First, to be fair, first it looked like a bit of a 4-3-3, but I was like, or not like a true 4-3-3. It was almost like a 4-2-2 diamond. Like that first when I saw that, I was like, oh, maybe that's how it's going.
Yeah.
I can't lie. I do really like Sam Coffey and Corbin Albert playing together. I think they complement each other really well. Sam Coffey is able to do her best Sam Coffey-ness when you have someone next to her who also can pick up some of the load of, as opposed to playing her as like a singular six. Because Corbin Albert really is like, I mean, I know we're saying double pivot, but it's like, really it's double pivot with like a six and then a proper eight, which previously for the U.S. Women's National Team has worked really, really well, thinking about Julie Ertz and Sam Mewis. I know they didn't actually play as a double pivot, but when you have a six and you have a proper number eight, problems that we have been emerging are solved a bit. I do think it's kind of funny how, or when the national team decides to put out Crystal Dunn as an outside back, because it's so immediately clear that they're like, oh, they're fast wingers, time to roll out Dunn, like fundamentally. But yeah, I mean, kind of looking at the lineups, obviously for Brazil, missing their captain, Javaelli is just like, yeah, that's a huge miss. Like that's just, it's a huge miss. Especially since I thought she had previously been playing so well for Brazil and also at times kind of helping them in the attack of, like really at times like playing up the middle. So yeah, I thought with her out and that news came semi-late Saturday night, because the game was on Sunday, it definitely dampened Brazil a little bit. But also, I kind of wish, like, I know Brazil was very much using this tournament as, technically as a tournament of this is supposed to be used, right? Like, you're getting in new players, you're getting in new faces, you want to see how they combine together. But also, at the same time, I, like, wish they had kind of started, like, a bit of a stronger lineup. Like, I wish Dabinha, for example, would have started. Dabinha didn't come until the 79th minute. And to me, like, a decision like that, it's like, oh, you were still just kind of treating this as, like, a game to play as opposed to a game to win. And really, once the United States kind of weathered the storm of the first 20 minutes, I was like, this game's either going to extra time or the U.S. is going to, like, score a goal or two and it's going to end, like, 2-0 to the U.S. I wish it didn't, because I wanted to see... not saying that the game wasn't necessarily competitive, but I just wanted to see, like, a stronger lineup for Brazil, but it was just kind of something that we didn't get to see in the end.
Yeah, you kind of got to, like, the thing that was very annoying about this game. I talked about it in the build-up, looking like it was going to be a very fun final and a very kind of chaotic endeavor with Brazil really being able to test the U.S. Women's National Team, and I thought they had the talent to, of course, put goals by them and beat them kind of in a similar way that Mexico did. Obviously, different game plan for the U.S., a bit more solid midfield for the U.S., so it was going to require a little bit more, given that the U.S. had solved some of those problems. But I still thought that there were issues, particularly for the U.S. in attack. I try to be rational about these things, to stay logical, because I know people think that I have something personal against Alex Morgan and Lindsey Horan, and I do not. However, I'm looking at this team and, okay, so the way I would describe it is just about everybody else on the pitch, from Sam Coffey to Trinity Rodman to even Rose Lavelle, but Rose probably shouldn't have been in that wide, like, midfielder position, but or wide forward position, but okay, fine. Everybody, like, those players wanted to play at one speed that was fast. Lindsey Horan and Alex Morgan do not play at that speed. They were slower. So the team had a very, like, contrasting, like, styles of play, especially with possession and in buildup, that just weren't jiving. You know, there was that one through ball that Alex Morgan passed way too late to Trinity Rodman. She'd made a diagonal run all the way across the line. And given Brazil's back three, you do have to make that pass. You do have to play the ball quickly, especially because Luciana will run out of her goal and get to the ball. I believe if Jaden Shaw is a player on the ball, she completes that pass and Robin's onside, no problem. But there were just a lot of issues like that where they just weren't on the same page. Through balls that were hit to Horan or hit to Alex Morgan would roll out of play, or the defender would get to them first, just because the players are kind of used to playing at a really top-end speed that Horan and Morgan can't really match. And so I love the Coffee and Albert midfield, like the double pivot, but that doesn't leave a whole lot of room for Lindsey Horan. So the question is, are we just shoehorning her into the pitch, like into the 11? Because we have a lot of 10s. There's a lot of 10s on the squad, like a ton of players that can play the number 10, Roosevelt for one. So I'm just confused about why we would do that. And I guess like she is the captain, so you can't really just be like, well, no more room for you in the team. But also from a squad building, from a tactical standpoint, what other option would you really have? And yeah, I mean, I've got more to say, but I want to hear you react to that, because I was just frustrated by the U.S.'s like players going like winning the ball, going forward, and then just slamming on the brakes.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question to ask. I think for me, it was a bit more noticeable with a Lindsey Horan than an Alex Morgan, because I will say at times this tournament and I think. And I'm, you know, I think Alex Morgan probably knows this too, of like at her point in the career, she knows she's not as quick as she used to be. But I think also, and also thinking about the way that like a team like San Diego, for example, uses her, of really trying to like emphasize her hold up play. And I'm like, if that is the way the US wants to go, is that like my number one choice? No. But like, if it's a, hey, we just had a rising superstar in Mia Fischel just tear her ACL, and we need to bring someone into camp. Actually, Alex Morgan is my number two. But anyway, Alex Morgan got to camp. I'm gonna stop there. But Alex Morgan got into camp. And so, and like knowing that you're going to need to play her, because these players also fundamentally cannot play every single, even though they'll try to put them out there for every single minute, every single game. They can't do that. So if you're putting Alex Morgan up top, to emphasize her hold to play, maybe emphasize, I will say, like, maybe in the past 4 or 5 matches, I think her, like, her actual flick-ons have been very, very good. So if it's, like, you know, you try to put the ball on Alex Morgan's forehead, try to get her a flick-on or something like that, to then have your runners go, like, you have your wingers going in behind, I think that's a great, like, if that's what you're going to have to do, like, that is not the lesser of all evils, but like that is not a plan that I'm necessarily super mad at. Cause also I think at a time, I will say with this changing of the guard happening, I will say having at least from everything we've kind of seen in the last 3 or 4 games, where at times maybe the US could have gotten really frustrated. And we saw, for example, Alex Morgan telling people to calm down, kept telling people to get it together. It's like, I don't hate it. Do I love it? No, but I also don't hate it. Where, like, for example, at times before, it was like, why are we even doing this? It was like, I don't necessarily hate that. I think the problem with me with the lineup, besides having Roosevelt out on the wing, which we know does not work, Gareth Taylor tried it, and it was like, objectively, what are you doing? It's kind of the same conundrum that Jill Ellis had in 2019, where it was like, you either had to play Horan or you had to play Roosevelt. You can't play them together. And it makes sense, right? Like, they both want to do the same things. I do think because of the absence of Sam Mewis, it has made Roosevelt generally a more well-rounded midfielder, which obviously I think will suit her down in the long run. It's always best to be, you know, your best well-rounded player. But they both want to do the same thing in terms of, like, you know, being in the center of the pitch, wanting to be the number 10 on the pitch. And as we've seen previously, like, it just doesn't work. You can't have them both, which is like why I think the attack in a game against Canada, for example, despite the water on the pitch, seemed to at least like maybe flow at times semi better than kind of what was happening during the match, where it wasn't necessarily like clunky, but it just like, it did not seem like everyone was on the same rhythm. And I know you mentioned that in terms of like, for example, having Alex Morgan be slow and having a Lindsey Horan be slower. But also with that, with having them both, like with having a Lavelle and a Horan on the pitch, because you're having them both on the pitch, and Lindsey Horan also wants to get like very much in the attack almost at times. I think Jess McDonald actually asked her a question about it on the post game where like she was like, you know, you want to get up and be in that number nine area, which at times mm-hmm. she was.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That also like takes away quickness on the wing because then you won't have Roosevelt Central. So have Lindsay Horan there, but that means you're only having Trinity Robin as your outlet pass. You don't have, for example, Lynn William as your outlet pass, which we saw, which like Lynn William scored a goal. It was called off. Like so clear. It was fun. I watched it in real time and I was like, she's off, unfortunately. But like when Sophia Smith and Lynn Williams came on, all of a sudden the attack was a bit more dynamic. And I want to give many props to Sophia Smith because I think she did a lot of dirty work in basically the second two thirds of that match when she came on. Where she was not only trying to win the ball, but was also taking like a ton of hits, stuff like that. And so, for example, when you saw that moment of a Sophia Smith and a Lynn Williams combined, when you're like, oh, we have two really quick people up top, it was like magic. And like, you know, and that was literally, and that was just like pouncing on a misplaced pass by Brazil, having someone quick enough to get the ball and having someone quick enough to get in behind. To be fair, Lynn Williams was about a step and a, or like, I would say about a foot or two offside. But if, you know, if she held her run, like that's something exactly that you want to do when you're trying to, maybe if you want to sit in and then hit on the counter. So yeah, that's my long way of saying of like, one thing that I did notice was like Rose had a really, really quiet match, which is kind of unlike Rose for this team, I would say. Especially when like the US is up and is trying to pounce and things like that. But also on the flip side, that like having Lindsay Horan kind of, like, to me, it's like, oh, if you're going to do this, you need to change formation. Like, honestly, play a 4-4-2. And, like, yes, that technically would put Roosevelt back on the wing. However, it would be, like, at least you then have Trinity on the other side of that 4-4-2 and maybe give you a bit of balance on the speed where, like, you know, maybe Rose can cut in and try to get, like, a ball across the field and then, you know, follow in behind or something like that. Because there is, or honestly, well, it would be need another formation change. But I just, it's one thing I kind of picked up on. It kind of reminded me a little bit of, not like full Vlaco era, but like shades of it once Sam was really out of like trying to put the two of them together, and it either forcing Roosevelt to be in a more, like a much more midfieldy space as a more, or like almost like an 8 as opposed to a 10. Or that it's just like the two of them, despite what looks like a great friendship between the two of them, does not connect well. And I'm not really, and if I'm being honest, I'm not really sure why, but besides, well, I can come up with some reasons why, but maybe I won't get into them today. Just like the having the two of them together and having like Roosevelt on the wing, for example, does not work unless it's going to be a purposeful thing where she's almost like not even an inverted winger, but like you're like she's on the wing, I'm putting up air quotations, or that she's on the wing, but she actually just tucks inside, which then allows your outside back, which seems the way the US wants to play, letting her outside back get forward, which also we did not see really a lot from Crystal Dunn this match either.
And given Brazil's wingers and the wing back combinations and all of that, we probably weren't going to, because that's kind of the whole thing with Brazil. You have to really try to lock that down and play aggressively to stop that. But what it does do is when you are able to get the ball, there is a lot of space in behind, especially in wide areas, which made it really frustrating to kind of see the attack be slow. And so I'm with you. I kind of agree that like the Rose Lavelle, Lindsay Horan thing is interesting, but I don't know. I just look at it and say, the solution's really simple, right? Like there's no real need for a formation change. Just make a decision. Like, sorry, Lindsay Horan, the Coffee and Albert double pivot is working. Like it's cooking. We're going to ride that. And we need a true number 10. So it's going to be Roosevelt. Put Lynn Williams on the wing. I'm telling you, like, given how chaotic, like, Brazil in a way kind of did a Colombia where they didn't have to play the match the way that they did. I feel like they could have gone straight up with the U.S. and played how they approached other matches, used those areas and kind of thought a little bit deeper about how to attack the U.S. It almost feels like their game plan wasn't great. And when it didn't really work, they kind of got more frustrated than making like necessary changes. And that was a little frustrating to see because they'd been so good at changing tactically to be able to gain an upper hand. And so I kept kind of waiting for that to happen, and it never really did. And then, of course, the goal happens for the U.S., and you're like, well, that's going to be very, unless they can do something bonkers, that might be it. Which
almost happened. Yeah. Casey Krueger had a goal line, a fantastic goal line save. Then she yelled at everyone. I said, "That mama dog." I literally did say that in the truck around me. I was like, "That mama dog, Casey Krueger." She did have a huge goal line save at the very end of that match.
That was like seconds from the final whistle. They needed that, because that was about to be another like, "Hey, guess what? You're playing extra time."
Here's more extra time. And I was like, please, no, let me go home.
Yeah, it's like, everybody say thank you to Casey Krueger is basically it. I don't know. I'm just like, it's just frustrating for me to see kind of these things stand out so glaringly. Like, I hear what you're saying about the Alex Morgan role. And I actually think that playing her in that role, as opposed to trying to make her like a false nine, you know, kind of like Vlatko was having her try to be like another Katarina Macario or something. It's like, nah, bruh, she don't do that.
She's never done that.
Never in her life. So I think it is smart to do that, but then you just still need more speed along, especially in this game. I really feel like this game could have been over like the Colombia game by halftime, given the space that was available to the U.S. And if you put the right players in the right positions, they can exploit it and would have exploited it. As it was, though, the U.S. did score a goal, so we do need to talk about it. It was just before halftime. It was Sam Coffey stepping up to win the ball high, which, Sam Coffey is kind of what I've been trying to tell folk even for a couple years now. Like, hey, she's legit. Put her in. So she steals the ball. She feeds Robin high up. But this is kind of it. Like, I think this goal, like, yes, it happened. It is the game winner. But for me, it just is like it's like exhibit A of exactly what I'm talking about. Think of everything that had to go right to get this goal. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, this is how your pattern of play, this is the best case scenario for the pattern of play and the personnel we had. So the ball goes high. Rodman chases it, is first to it. She's really, really high and quite deep. So she's kind of waiting for another move, somebody else. She was looking to put the cross in herself, and there were no really options. So she just kind of keeps her foot on the ball, rolls it backwards, waits for Emily Fox to get higher up, passes the ball along the line up to Emily Fox, who hits a really high arcing cross that basically traveled probably, 35, 40 yards in the air. Across the box. Lindsay Horan is first to it and heads it into the other side of the net. And it was a really good goal. It was good to see Emily Fox be able to deliver a pass like that from a very wide area. But my question is, and this is where I differ from a lot of people that just kind of feel like, you know, captain stepped up, you know, all the cliche shit, right? Captain stepped up, scored when he needed her to score. Like, that's exactly what we need. And I'm sitting here like, yo, number one, we probably could have had a couple goals already. But also number two, how repeatable does this pattern of play seem to you? Are we going to wait for a 40-yard cross to Lindsay Horan's head and hope that that's going to be the primary source of our goals? Okay.
Yeah. It's like, so it was a great goal, and I'm not taking away that for anything. Like, and I think it showed why we need to have a Sam Coffey. I'm going to quickly derail it. Sam Coffey, I think, has played two fantastic games. I think when she has a player next to her who's supposed to be next to her, she is able to really thrive on the pitch. And I feel like she's also gotten, like, significantly more physical in the last two matches. Previously, I'd never thought of her, not necessarily I haven't thought of her as a ball winner, but I've not thought of her as, like, an extremely physical player, where I feel like in the last two matches, she's just been cracking skulls and taking names, and I'm like, okay, Sam Coffey.
She's just living up to the shirt tuck. If you don't tuck in your shirt, you gotta be gangster. She's figuring that out, so she's doing it. It's calling to her.
I completely agree. And it was one of those weird goals that, like, kind of felt like it came from nothing. I will say that cross that Emily Fox had was almost like one of those, like, slow mo crosses where it's like the ball hung in the air for such a long time, and then all of a sudden it's like boom, goal. And it's like, I think that pattern of play is, like, it's good to score against teams, especially I think at three of the back, getting the ball high and wide is just naturally going to open up a lot more areas. Because I don't know if you noticed, Andre, Emily Fox was, like, wide open like she had her time to like think about it and put in completely place that ball, which I was like, oh, that's kind of hilarious. Defending by Brazil, something we did talk about.
Well, think about this though. I want you to hold that point, but I also want people to think about it because it may sound like I'm hating, but think about this. Think about how Rodman had the ball on the right and she still had time to wait for Emily Fox, who was another player on the right. So they basically double stacked on the right in the attacking area and Brazil still didn't get a defender down there.
I know. Well, look, we said early on that Brazil is going to score a lot of fun goals, but they're also going to be unserious defending. And that was like, to me, watching that goal on replay is like the perfect example of that. Because it's just like, Emily Fox has literally time and space on the ball. Maybe let's not do that. But yeah, honestly, outside of that, like, especially watching highlights, and I know that extended highlights don't always, like, you know, it doesn't really show the big picture, but like it kind of felt like the U.S. game plan was like put the ball on Lindsey Horan's forehead, essentially. Like the two biggest chances I think the U.S. really had this match outside of the disallowed goal was one off a corner where Lindsey Horan gets her head to it and heads it almost straight at Luciana, and then the other was the goal. And so it's like, you know, you would hope that in a match of the U.S. obviously, they're, you know, trying to continue growing all the things that they say they're going to do. Like, you do want, like, a variety of, like, chances in some way, shape, or form. I felt like the majority of chances were had by Brazil. And to be fair, Brazil was trying to test Alyssa Nair. They were going high at times. They were trying to, sometimes trying to go low, like, or even just having, like, pouncing on mistakes, for example. Like, there was that early mistake that Alyssa Nair does not get burned on in the very beginning after waiting, like, basically waiting to kick the ball out. Too long. But yeah, basically I was like thinking about the attacking plays that happened, it was basically like just those two. And how many times have we talked about the importance of a multi-dimensional attack? Thinking about a team, for example, at times like Germany during the Women's World Cup, where basically when Germany was down, the game plan was put the ball on Pop's forehead, which, to be fair, for a lot of teams is almost a foolproof plan, because that her forehead is a ball magnet. But at when it does not come off, then it's like, well, what are you gonna do? And so you need to like be able to, even if you're not scoring them, I think creating chances from a lot of different things. I can think about what the U.S. scored, doing quick math, but the U.S. scored like 10 or 12 goals this tournament, somewhere around there. And it's like, but also how many of those came from someone getting on the wing and crossing the ball in, which, like, no, that's not the worst thing in the entire world, right? But like, if you're only scoring from that kind of goal, maybe a header and then penalties, it's going to make you easier to defend. Where I think, you know, for example, when you have a player like Jaden Shaw coming in, who is super fun and can score a variety of different goals from different places, and you have the depth in your squad to score goals from, I think, a lot of different ways of not just basically going down the right, because Midge had, I mean, well, Rodman didn't have an assist, but like Midge had two assists. Like, it's just, it, I will say, like, it is a little like maybe formulaic is the right way to say, because I don't think it's necessarily typical, but like also seeing, hey, our right winger gets end line or goes 1v1 and then crosses a ball in. That's not necessarily a bad, like, that's not a, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but when I think of, for example, the strongest attacks in the world, like sometimes a Barcelona, or even at times like think about how Japan normally scores goals, they can hit you in like 17 different ways. And so I think that is something that the U.S. needs to maybe look at a little bit going forward, of like, how are we going to create goals from like multiple of like different variety? Because like, yeah, thinking about these games outside of maybe the Dominican Republic, and to be fair, those were two Midge on the right tap in, Midge on the right cross the ball tap ins, and two penalties.
Yeah, that was just Midge going crazy.
It was just Midge going crazy. Like, you know, there needs to be at least some sort of variety in the goals that you were scoring outside of, like, I think the two most interesting or most fun goals that the U.S. has scored was the Jenna Neiswanger goal, which came from an Alex Morgan flick on header, or the Sophia Smith goal, which came also from it came from a Roosevelt flick on header to the on running Sophia Smith in the swamp that was happening in that match.
Yeah. So I was looking at it while you were talking, and 15 goals total for the U.S., 5 were penalties. So a third of their goals were penalties. But in open play, yeah, I agree. I mean, that's kind of been my thing, is we have the players and we have the attacking talent to be versatile. And I don't think we've ever tweaked the system enough to be able to get what we like to maximize the talent that we have. You know, obviously, in this case, I'm talking about Sophia Smith. I don't think that they have utilized her in the best ways that kind of set her up in ways that she's most effective. And I actually think that's a failure of the tournament, if I'm being honest. I understand that once Mia Fischel goes down with her ACL injury, which we hate still so much.
I still hate it. I'm still not over it.
No, I won't be. So I won't be until she's back. Let's put it that way. But I understand that that changed the dynamics of pretty much everything. But I still think that there were opportunities and ways to change things, to try some different things. And outside of, you know, having Midge high and just cooking and relying on that for a game against the Dominican Republic, we really didn't change much when it, especially once it came down to like the knockout rounds. It was all the same thing. And that was a little frustrating. So
yeah, and I think it speaks volumes that the two most interesting goals that I pointed out were also two goals that basically came from like direct vertical play, which we so rarely see with the US.
Which is wild, because that's what they do. Like, it's what these attackers do. It's what they feast off of. Like, let them run. I let them play has been the thing that's been so frustrating, especially like, it's so weird too, the way we do this is like, we'll only play the fun lineups against teams that are going to sit in a low block. And then we're like, wow, they're like, it's difficult to create chances against a low block. Yeah. But if teams are going to give you...
That's the whole purpose.
Yeah, right? And then, but if teams are going to play straight up and give you space wide or through the middle, why wouldn't you then play those players so you can really see what you got and so you can really have them test teams? I mean, Brazil's line was high. As we mentioned, they had a hard time getting defenders back because they're, I mean, as spoken in the lineup, Adriana was playing as a wingback, and I love her. She should have been on the MVP list, but she ain't no wingback.
Why was she there?
Right.
That neutralizes the best thing about her.
Right.
Which is cooking in the middle.
Yeah. So, yeah. So there were things that we could have exploited with better tactics and better lineup, and getting the win is good. So I want to do this, okay? I know I've talked about the negative aspects of like what made me frustrated about this game, and really from both sides. It was the US and Brazil. I was frustrated from both sides. I thought this would be a more fun final. It wasn't, even though we got a really kind of unique goal, kind of a goal. And again, I think it's a good goal. I just wonder how much you can replicate that goal is kind of my question mark. But I also want to talk about the good things that did come of this game. So like, or the tournament overall. So you mentioned it, the Coffee Albert, like midfield, we see that both of them can ball, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we wanted to see. We needed to see. They stood up against a string of from Colombia to Canada to Brazil, and they managed it and they held it down. So like, that's impressive. I also thought Naomi Girma and Taryn Davidson.
They were very good center back pair.
Yeah, that looks like a really good. They closed that stuff down. Yeah, that looks like a really good center back pairing. And one of my questions coming into this was, are we going to find Naomi Girma's center back partner? And I don't want to rule out Abby Dahlkemper, because I think the game she was in was a Mexico game. And that was obviously not.
Look, it was a 2019 center back pairing in 2024.
Correct.
And that's absolutely. No shade to either of them.
No, it's not. It's not. But that's
especially
exactly
my girl Reba, because I still love her. Yeah, but like.
That is exactly what it was. So, yeah. So I don't think she's out of the running at all. But I do think that right now, if you tell me that Girma and Davidson are it from like, I'm not going to argue. Like, I liked what I saw. I think they play well together. And then on like a intangible level, and this is where I can't like beef too much about like tactical things, given the cycle that most of those players just endured and what happened at the World Cup, maybe they just needed to fucking win something, right? Like, maybe that was it. Maybe it wasn't even about, like, let's get like the tactical tweaks, let's do all this stuff, which I still think is important because the Olympics, you're not going to be able to go there and be like, we just going to win it. Like, you're going to need to do more than that, and they will have opportunities to. So I'm interested in the future. But this being the biggest, like the next kind of trophy on the line of some importance, for them to go out and win it, exercise demons like Sophia Smith scoring a penalty, Alyssa Nair saving three clear penalties and scoring hers, which she also did at the World Cup.
I was like, maybe that wasn't her demon. It wasn't her demon in per se.
Right.
Took on the demons of the team in penalties.
Right, you're correct. And like, again, maybe it was just to exercise all of that and get that out of the way, lift the trophy, realize that like, you're not far away from being the team that everybody expects, at least everybody in the U.S. expects the team to be. Maybe that's like the ultimate purpose and the only kind of real, like, most important takeaway. Although, you know, I'm still a nerd, so I'm still going to argue that the midfield and the center back pairing are the most important ones. But like, psychologically for the team, it really feels like winning this tournament meant a lot. And it wasn't just your standard, like, CONCACAF, like, go to CONCACAF to lick your wounds kind of deal. This was like, Brazil was in the way, Colombia was in the way, like two very good teams that made the World Cup. Colombia, that went further than you did in the World Cup. Canada was there, who won a gold medal in the last Olympics. And you got beat by Mexico. So you have a genuine rivalry that formed as well. And you learn from that game. So like, for me, maybe that's the most important thing that came out of this for the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, in her post-game press conference, Twyla Kilgore basically said that we accomplished our number one goal, which was she didn't say number one goal, but she said we accomplished one of our goals, which was having fun. Which is, so when you think about it, like, from a more macro perspective, that kind of makes you sad that you're like, that was one of your goals?
Fun?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, that points to like,
yeah.
Oh, that means the vibes were so bad. The vibes were so off previously. And so because of that, I was like, oh, that stinks. Like, that just, you know, the fact that that's one of your goals that, like, I mean, I know Lynn Williams has said it to me when I was following her journey to the World Cup, but also, like, she said in other interviews too, of like, you know, these players fundamentally are playing a kid's game and they're allowed to take joy in that. And like, at the end of the day, it's also like a kid's game, which I think sometimes provides some important perspective of not getting like necessarily too high on the highs or even too low on the lows. But yeah, I think this was also just like a really big growing moment for the team. Like, I know we say like trot out the kids all the time. And I only say this because fortunately I'm a Chelsea football fan and watch the men's team sometimes of, you know, young players, like in a young core, they're going to have their ups and downs. Like, they're not going to be consistent because consistency comes with age and experience. Like, there's going to be times that's going to happen. But I think has been most important to me for the U.S. over these matches is that they've been not just winning, but winning ugly. Like, they haven't been the most beautiful performances. It's had to be like sometimes just grinding stuff out and like getting your team off the line across the line by the scruff of the neck. But the thing is, those are also performances that you can hang your hat on and you can build on. So that way, look, it's March and like across the pond, Chelsea women are getting some ugly 0-0 wins, ugly 1-0 wins. But that also means, on the flip side, you're able to build on those and get those beautiful 6-7-8-0 wins. And that's also what I expect to come from this team. Andre, but I do want to quickly mention a few awards that happened. The U.S. got the Fair Play Award, which was kind of random, I can't lie. But I was just like, huh? Okay. The best goalkeeper of the tournament is Alyssa Nair. The Young Player Award of the tournament is Olivia Smith of Canada. Shout out to her. Two goals, two assists, and she is definitely a bright young star for Canada. She wears the number 23, just putting that out there. But she's 19 years old, and so I feel like between her and then best player of the tournament, Jaden Shaw, as well as Mexico's rising young stars, there's going to be a lot of fun young stars for CONCACAF to watch day in and day out for hopefully the next decade or so. If not more, if depending on how long these players want to have their careers. And then also top scorer award, which is honestly something that makes me cackle because I don't trust in her at all. But every time I say I don't trust her, she then scores a banger as Adriana Leone.
She's shutting you up.
I know. It was six goals in five games. Every time I'm like, I don't subscribe to this ministry. And she's like, are you sure? Like, I mean, no, but yes. I swear she does it to me every single time.
It'll make you a believer.
Literally every single time where I'm like, what is she doing? And then she scores a banger. But yeah, six goals in five games. I can't lie, a bit insane. And one of those came as a hat trick versus Paraguay. So shout out to her. But, you know, I think this tournament, despite exhausting me, has been really good on the whole. Like, I think we've learned a lot from these teams, which is truly the point of these tournaments. But also, we found some new faves, like El Salvador, Brenda Seren, new fave, like, immediately. I'm like, bring her, like, she is fun and I can't wait to watch her. And, you know, Canada, their new era is beginning. They're playing a lot faster football. Mm-hmm. If you ever heard anyone say cold oatmeal football about Canada, they've been listening to me describe how they used to play. And look, they're not playing cold oatmeal football anymore. They're playing fun football, even though they didn't have the best performance during the waterlogged. But also, can you blame them? It was a slip and slide. Yeah. They were playing soccer at a water park, essentially. But yeah, it's like shaping up for the Olympics. And the funniest thing is, we're going to see Canada-Brazil real close for the We Don't Know What She Believes Cup in a very, very short time. It's going to be very fun. But yeah, I feel like we did learn a lot from this tournament, even though I'm going to let you talk about this tournament. And then there's something I do want to rant about in this tournament.
Ooh, a rant. I like it. Yeah, I mean, I thought the tournament was great overall. Like I said, this wasn't your typical CONCACAF tournament, and I think that's because a lot of CONCACAF teams have improved. Mexico in particular really needed this tournament, even though their last game didn't go the way they wanted. I think they have plenty to build on, and it's not just the performance against the U.S. That's the one that everybody's going to point to, and honestly, for good reason. It was a great performance, but I thought they figured things out in kind of the long run. For what they needed to do and what they hadn't done in the previous cycle. So I'm excited to see this team continue to grow and develop and ball out. I honestly, like, you know me, I love Jaden Shaw, but I also think Ovalle probably deserved that. You know, maybe it was just like, hey, she's here. So
I think if Mexico got to the final, she probably would have gotten.
Yeah, that's correct. That's fair. But so, yeah, I love that. I love the way that Brazil figured it out. Again, we saw 4-2-3-1 first game, switched it up 3-4-3, and then that just balled out. And they were so fun. Again, take away the final. They were the best performing team of the tournament, which, you know, with Colombia there and given what they had just done at the World Cup, that wasn't really guaranteed. We actually thought Colombia was going to be the team to beat. Brazil beat them. And then Colombia didn't make it to the final. And that was also made the tournament more interesting to kind of see. Like you mentioned, Canada developing. I thought Paraguay was a fun team to watch as well. That was a great addition to the tournament. So I was I loved this tournament. It was really fun. We met a lot of players. Puerto Rico had like the early moment, the game of the tournament with that nasty little flick behind the line and like last minute goal that gave them a win. That was just super, super fun. So like, yeah, I thought this tournament was great. I think they definitely had their moments where they CONCACAF too hard. The waterlogged game was definitely one of them.
100%.
And not knowing who was in charge of that or not being willing to actually make the call in terms of player safety, that was bad. So it wasn't all good, but in terms of the players and performances on the pitch, I thought it was a really fun tournament and I was really excited for it. And I think that's also why I'm like, given the fact that all of these things like added up and the U.S. did manage to navigate every challenge that was thrown in front of them, that's meaningful. So, you know, from a U.S. perspective, strictly, I thought in terms of winning it, especially given that, you know, still an interim coach, so much, how much developing are you actually going to do? you know, maybe these are the things that you hold on to for now until you can develop a bit more tactically and structurally from a head coach who's actually there day to day. So, all right, I've said my piece. Time for your rant.
Yeah, I have a rant about something that went a bit under the radar. So we saw that Panama, unfortunately, did not win a single game, did not get a single point from this tournament, especially after showing up at the Women's World Cup in flying fashion, where, to be fair, they also lost, I believe, all three of their games. But Martis Cox scored an absolute banger, and they were still going for it like that. They scored three goals against France. Yes, they lost 6-3, but they also scored three goals against France, which is like, what? And technically, the first one was in the first minute of the game. And so, like, you know, after they lost, she was talking post game and basically it said, you know, expressed her frustration with how Panama is doing right now, right? Like, she mentioned not seeing her desire to see like steady progress after their unfortunate performances in the Gold Cup, especially after building on the great performances they had at the Women's World Cup. And she essentially had said that, like, you know, that they were not up to the standard of the tournament, but it also went beyond them. It really went to the Federation and the working conditions that they've been under. And so in response, this makes me so frustrated.
Yeah.
So in response, the Panamanian Football Federation president, Manuel Arias, basically said Marta Cox, as well as other players, were out of shape. They're fat. They couldn't move on the pitch, which is ridiculous because Marta Cox has been, like, despite that being a disgusting thing to say and fatphobic, it's also not true. Like, these players have been, like, the majority of these players are either in preseason or playing professionally already. Like, Liga MX Femenil has kicked off in, like, what, January 1st? I know it's not, like, they've been playing for weeks. Like, that's a ridiculous thing to say, but it's also just, like, extremely disgusting because these words actually came out on International Women's Day, and it's like, International Women's Day, we want to celebrate women, but still pay them less and call them fat, not give them the same working conditions. And I know that's something that, like, went, you know, really went under the radar, and she did threaten to not wear the Panama, like, not play for Panama again, which I think is something perfectly fair to say after your federation president, after you were like, you know, we had a disappointing Gold Cup, we need better support from the federation, was like, oh, you're fat, you're lazy, you can't move well on the pitch. And to be fair, the Panamanian Football Federation immediately was like, no, we are so sorry. He did not mean what he said. We are so sorry. But it was honestly something that I think went a bit under the radar during this, because, you know, with games basically every day for 2 weeks straight, group stage, you know, quarterfinals, semifinals, etc. It was something that 100% could have, like, it did kind of go under the radar, and I didn't see a lot of outcry about it. But I think, especially now that the tournament has ended, it is something that is just, like, disgusting and should 100% not be tolerated. You know, like, just the fact that you kind of thought that you could get away with something like that is absolutely disgusting. And also, we know, like, how many, I mean, we have these moments where we're, like, celebrating, like, you know, the CONCACAF is launching a CONCACAF Women's Champions League, which we're obviously so excited about. And the creation of this W Gold Cup, which is, I will say, it is their inaugural version. I know there was a previous Gold Cup, but it was like an invitational, and CONCACAF itself was like, this is the inaugural version of this tournament. So whatever. You know, we're taking these moments to, like, celebrate, and we're having all this growth of infrastructure for women's football, but also at the same time, it is still fundamentally the haves and the have-nots, and the haves are, like, I'm going to say grand total, like, maybe three teams, maybe four, max five around the world, while the have-nots are still struggling with working conditions. And not saying this for Panama of not getting payment, but, like, how many teams during the Women's World Cup were either having a team like Jamaica having to fundraise to get training cramps to the World Cup, or having Nigerian players, for example, like, you know, striking at various points over the last, I want to say, decade of, you know, wanting World Cup payments, etc. Of, you know, there's so much to celebrate, but there's also still so much to call out and so much to bring attention to and so much action to be done on behalf of these players. And so, like, while I'm also thrilled about this W Gold Cup and it was so fun and I, you know, had my first producer tag ever, like, at the same time, like, there's still so much to be done, and it is also so disgusting that, like, this fat phobia is still just in and around the game, because it's been leveled at way too many players. And these players are professional athletes. They know what to do. They know how to be in shape. Half of them are playing already in their leagues in the middle of it. And it's just, it's disgusting. I want it out of the game.
Yeah, that was some real bullshit, especially after, like, it, like you said, the middle of the tournament where things are, like, trending upward. And this is finally something that CONCACAF seemed to have gotten right. Yeah, I mean, we definitely should have a longer conversation about this, because mostly I was just like, man, shut the fuck up. Like, you don't need to be in your position. If that can ever come out of your mouth, you need to be gone. And so I was a little disappointed. I understand apologizing, but I think that coming out and saying, coming out your mouth that way, tells me that you should not be in the position that you're in. And I understand apologizing for it, and they should, but they should have also followed that up with action. And so it will be interesting to follow the team and see what happens the next time the national team comes together. And I do hope that there's not a toxic situation like what happened with Spain. And there's this animosity between the executives and the suits in the federation and the players, because we know how bad that can get and what that can breed. So we'll absolutely be keeping an eye on that. And you know what? I was going to say, let's do an impromptu heated and hype, but I think that's perfect, because I think that's both of our heateds. Cause that was also something that I read and I saw, and I was like, come on, like, this shit, come on. And you know what? I'm going to claim you're hyped as well. How about that? I'm going to say it. We're both hyped about the exact same thing.
Cowboy Carter.
Or not.
I was like, I don't know. What am I excited about? I don't know.
Yes, Cowboy Carter. Yes, yes, yes. But I, what I was going to say is I was going to lead us to the end of the podcast by saying that we are hype about the return of the NWSL, and that we will be doing an NWSL preview episode later this week. So keep an eye out for that, because that is also what we are both collectively, you and I, hype about.
Andre just joined me into that hype. I am excited about the NWSL coming back, but I also wish I had like another week. Wish I just had another week before all the craziness kicks off, because I was doing my prep work today, and like there's so many trades that have happened that I was like, I fully forgot about that. Taylor Korniak, her name is Taylor Flint, plays for Racing Louisville now, and it's like, completely forgot that happened. Messiah Bright now plays for Angel City. Like, there's a lot to come. New media rights deal. I have to find out where Ion is. Someone teach me. I don't know.
We will go,
I can't find it. I tried.
All of that.
I didn't try hard, but I did try.
We will go through all of that in our preview episode. But until then, appreciate y'all listening. Courtney, are you going to tell the people bye?
No, I'm not going to tell them bye. I'm going to say see you later, because we have another episode coming out this week.
Well, that's not the way to end it.
Do you really want to buy?
Yeah, of course. This is what we do.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.